Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
Brought to you by Active Iron
on News Talk.
Now it's that time of the week where we put your questions to Dr. Nina Burns, GP at Generation Health Medical Clinic. Good afternoon to you, Dr. Nina. Thank
nice
you for joining us.
Thanks for having me here.
The questions are flooding in, so I'll get straight to them. First of all, I'm a man in my mid-30s. I recently found what feels like a cyst in my perineum or scrotum area. It's not really painful. It's about the size of a pea. Some pus came out of it last week, but overall, no pain really. At what stage should I go and get it checked out? Or what changes should I look for? I'm pretty sure it's just a cyst, though.
Okay, so it certainly does sound like a cyst, but it also sounds like a type of cyst that we call a sebaceous cyst. So sebaceous cysts are it's the gland at the bottom of a hair follicle, and we have hair all over our bodies, but mm-hmm. particularly in the perineum. And so you can get these cysts. It's where you get a buildup of kind of debris and bacteria, and they can sometimes be very small and just release, and they might never cause you any problem. But they can get bigger over time. And I suppose more importantly, you know, if it releases or if you squeeze it, it's a very temporary thing and it can damage around. They will keep refilling unless you get them removed.
Okay.
So if it's very small and it's not causing you any problems, you could keep an eye. I would always say, you know, if you're at the GP, get them to look at it just to make sure that's what it is. It certainly sounds like it. But if it keeps coming back, it might be worth getting it checked and getting it removed.
Okay, don't ignore it. Yeah. I have a pain in my leg when I put pressure on it to walk. It's fine when I'm sitting down or lying down. It only hurts when there's pressure on it.
Yeah, so I suppose, you know, any pain that's going on unusually, you should get it checked. It's very hard with this question. I don't know how old this person is. I don't know if they have any other medical issues. You know, if someone has osteoarthritis and they're sore walking, that's osteoarthritis. Osteoarthritis, which is wear and tear, tends to get worse when you exert yourself. Okay?
Okay.
Whereas inflammatory arthritis, inflammation tends to get worse when you rest. But if it's really just when you stand, particularly if you've injured it or anything like that, you might want to go and get checked. It could be a sign of a more significant tear or sprain in the area. Obviously, you know, bones, if they're grating on each other or irritated, can be sore when you, you know, if you stand up, you have two bones pressing on each other,
mm-hmm.
and that can cause some discomfort. So in general, a pain that should not be there, that is lasting longer than a few weeks, I would always just go along and get it checked.
Yeah, and I know it's hard from your point of view when you don't have a lot of background information in terms of age and all of that. I'm 2 months pregnant and smothered with hay fever. Can I take antihistamines or not? Mixed answers online. I know that feeling.
I know.
When you go and, of course, Dr. Google, I know we shouldn't, but and everything, particularly during pregnancy, you get all sorts of different answers, don't you?
No, and I suppose, first of all, congratulations on your pregnancy, but also you're at the phase of pregnancy where maybe you're not feeling as great as you might be. The good news is better times are coming. You know, for most people, they feel a lot better from 3 months. But hay fever is actually incredibly common in pregnancy, and you're just unlucky. It's also the time of year where it tends to be really bad. And the reason being is actually the progesterone, which is one of the hormones that increases in pregnancy. It causes an increased blood flow to what we call your mucous membranes, which would be the lining of your nose. So it tends to swell. So pregnant people do tend to get more dramatic hay fever symptoms, and it can be really miserable if you're feeling awful and then you're congested. So the good news is we do prescribe antihistamines in pregnancy. You can go in and have a chat with the pharmacist. We tend to start with the older one, like diphenhydramine or Pyritin would be a brand that people know. Unfortunately, they're the ones that make you a little bit sleepy, but they are the ones that we have the most experience using in pregnancy and have been around. The issue that with the others is obviously no one ever did a trial with antihistamines and took a whole load of pregnant women and gave them to them. So any evidence we have is what we call anecdotal, which is more people using them. So we can't technically recommend the newer ones, but, you know, have a chat with your doctor, have a chat with the pharmacist. And sometimes you decide the benefits versus the risks. And for some people, if they're really miserable, we do prescribe other things. Also, more importantly, most of the nasal sprays that we prescribe for hay fever, so the ones that are a very mild steroid, most of those are fine in pregnancy, and they can provide kind of more ongoing relief without the fatigue that you might get from some of the antihistamines.
Even those peppermint rollers around the nostrils or anything.
Oh, well, any of those things. And yeah, actually, all the things for hay fever. You know, Irish people, we are obsessed with hanging our clothes on the line in fine weather. We don't get fine weather that often, but
brand,
you know,
other people
note it's a very Irish thing to see clothes on the line, but you might as well bathe in a bed of pollen. Okay, so if you basically get out of bed, hang your sheets and your towels on the line in the sunshine, and then come in with your hay fever in the evening and have a shower and dry yourself in that towel and then sleep in that bed, you've just slept in a pollen coffin. So the important thing is you should dry your clothes indoors. You may not want to use a dryer, but don't hang them on the line. you know, keep your windows closed at night, which can be hard when it's humid. But again, the pollen counts are highest early in the morning. Some people find putting some Vaseline around the bottom of their nose helps. You know, all of those kind of lifestyle remedies which are not medication related can be helpful for anyone, pregnant or not.
Yes.
But I have this conversation about the line, and you know, there's a real Irish thing where people like their clothes off the line, but it's dreadful if you have hay fever.
And it feels like the cleanest, no, easiest option.
It's just a big trap. You can imagine just hanging there, trapping pollen all day.
Yeah. Wow, I never thought about it like that. Yeah. Really struggling to sleep, says our next text. I've tried everything. Warm baths, no phones before bed, not eating late, not drinking, not exercising too late, etc. I'm exhausted all the time and it's really affecting me. I'm very emotional and unable to concentrate. I'd rather not be on sleeping tablets, but I'm desperate for anything that might help. Any advice?
So, you know, I really feel sorry for this person. Yeah. Because I do say to patients who come to me with insomnia, and that's the medical term for not sleeping well, is, you know, sleep deprivation is a form of torture. So, you know, when you're not sleeping, it has a massive impact on your life in general. It sounds like this person has done what we call sleep hygiene. So sleep hygiene is, you know, your room should be like a cave, cool, dark and quiet. We're kind of wolves at heart. But also, again, the warm bath before bed and no phones, no blue light, not just phones, by the way. Screens and computer screens are another problem. A simple thing people overlook is having a very comfortable bed and mattress. It is worth investing in your bed and having comfortable, you know, cotton sheets that you're not going to sweat in. But if you really have tried all the lifestyle measures, and it certainly sounds like this person has, do go talk to your doctor. There are lots of different things. Sleeping tablets are the last resource because they're highly addictive. Mm. But, you know, we do sometimes use them for a very brief period. But there are other options. There are other medications sometimes. For instance, an antihistamine that makes you sleepy works for some people. And okay, you can buy something like that over the counter. Again, you shouldn't use it indefinitely, but to get you through a period of bad sleep, it might help. But it's worth talking to your pharmacist or going to have a chat with your doctor. Insomnia is a medical condition that is worth going to your doctor about. And there are other solutions. We sometimes prescribe things like melatonin. It's over the counter in other countries, but it's a prescription in Ireland. And it is the right thing for some people, again, to get them through a particular time. But also it's important to explore maybe the reason for not sleeping. And there are sleep therapists. You can do what's called sleep CBT, which is specific therapy,
okay,
to help you kind of figure what it is that's not sleeping. Simple things like if your mind races at night, keep a notebook by the bed, and things that come into your head, jot them down. The act of getting it out of your head actually helps your mind sleep. I know it sounds crazy, but try not to fall asleep. So when you're lying in bed saying, I need to sleep, it alerts the brain and you stay awake. So that's where the old thing of counting sheep. It's about doing something really boring. I had this woman tell me once that in her mind she organized her cupboard, her closet. It was in the States at the time. And I remember thinking she thought that was the most boring thing to do because she just no interest in her clothes. So she used to just do something that is really kind of mundane, boring, you know, counting to 100, whatever. That actually allows the brain to rest. And you have to switch the brain off to fall asleep. So this person, I would say, God love them, is lying in bed thinking about not falling asleep. And the brain is stimulated the whole time.
Yeah.
But please do go talk to someone because it does need to be addressed.
It sounds like they're doing everything right.
Oh, and
right,
it gets in on you, you know, not sleeping. We've all had runs of not sleeping and you know how dreadful you feel. I mean, I've been jet lagged the last week and, you know, I'm glad that's coming to an end, but that's a short period of insomnia. Too.
Yeah. And your brain knows that as
and
well.
And you know it'll pass. But yeah, if you know it's not going to pass, it's dreadful.
Awful. Yeah. Absolutely. Any advice for travel sickness? Never used to have it, but lately I've felt really sick when on the bus or the Lewis. I've had to get off the Lewis twice to vomit. Anything I can do for it? Or why would it have just come on now?
So interestingly, I suppose travel sickness is not that different to vertigo or, you know, that sense of your eye and your ear not being in sync with each other. So classically, you're on the ocean, you know, when you have it, you look at something that's not moving because dizziness and that motion sickness comes on when your eye and ear are registering different things. So some people are prone to travel sickness, but interestingly, vertigo is common enough with colds and flus and also sometimes with hay fever because if you're very congested,
you can be dizzy.
So if this person has had a cold or flu recently, it might explain why this has suddenly come on. Obviously, in women, I would always say if you've sudden unusual nausea, is there any chance you're actually pregnant? I think it's important to rule those things out. Mm-hmm. But maybe go along to the pharmacist. You can buy some of the older antihistamines. We seem to be talking about the antihistamines that make you sleepy, but they work for motion sickness for some people.
Yeah.
Again, a short-term relief. But go to your doctor. They'll have a look in your ears and they'll check things out for you and see is there any other
reason. Is there any point in those travel bracelets?
I don't know that there's any evidence behind them,
right,
but I know some people say they work. And there's, you know, I'm very much of if it's not going to do your harm, give it a go.
Yeah,
and even
if it's a placebo effect.
Trying them. Yeah, no, exactly. Once it's not going to harm you, you know, there's no problem trying them.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, can a peanut egg allergies be hereditary? I have a 4-month-old baby. My husband is allergic to peanuts and eggs, so we're concerned about when she goes on solids.
So we would never withhold a specific food or medicine. People often ask us about penicillin and that. We'd never withhold it specifically just because someone who's related to them has an allergy. So you only have an allergy if you have an allergy. So usually they would say, so Aideen Byrne would be the consultant in Crumlin, and she specifically has said before that actually those kind of allergies are not considered strongly genetic. Now, you do sometimes see families where allergies run, but I don't think it's the specific food. It may be other things going on. So what I would say is there is no reason to withhold nuts from that child just because they have a parent who's allergic. Mm-hmm. And a classic in a family, my father is highly allergic to peanuts and no one else in our family is.
Okay. So,
you know, and that's just one example, but those things don't tend to, you don't tend to see a whole family of people allergic to peanuts.
Okay.
So, and peanuts are very, they encourage you to wean on to some peanut butter early on now. And again, you know, you can follow the food ladder. You start with something containing egg as opposed to pure egg and work your way up. And if your child has a reaction, then go talk to your doctor.
That's a good
about
point.
It.
So let it be an ingredient rather than the food.
Absolutely. With eggs, you don't start with pure egg. You start with like these little sponge fingers that have some egg and you work your way up.
Yeah. Yeah. Good advice. When do you have to stop flying when you're pregnant? I'm 30 weeks and an uncle has been taken ill in Germany. So I'd like to get over, but is it safe?
So it's not so much that it's not safe to fly. Now, when you're pregnant, your blood is thicker, so you obviously have a higher chance of a clot in the leg or the lung. And it's all the more important that you're hydrated and moving about the flight. But there's no specific reason you can't fly. It's actually the airlines set the rules at 30 weeks because they don't want you to go into labour on the plane. So, you know, for a short haul flight, I think the cutoff is 32 weeks. Different airlines have different policies. But if you are otherwise well, and take all the precautions that you should take when flying, and you're flying to a country that has very good healthcare, I don't see why you couldn't go. Mm-hmm. But again, it would be up to your doctor. Go visit with your doctor, make sure everything is okay. And you'd usually have to get a letter stating your dates and that they're happy for you to fly.
And passed on to the airline.
Yeah. Yeah.
Suffering from a lot of trapped wind. Woman in my 60s, it's very embarrassing. I can't control it. Is there anything I can take for it?
Okay, so if you're over 55 and you have new gastrointestinal symptoms, so if these are new, you need to go talk to your doctor because it can be a sign of other things. And we would sometimes get an ultrasound or scans or scopes. A simple thing like gallstones can cause some upset stomach. If it's just related to certain foods, obviously looking at the foods that you eat, certain foods are more likely to create trapped wind. If you're constipated, you can get wind trapped behind, and that can be excruciating. It's almost like having an obstruction in your bowels. So to make sure that your bowels are moving regularly.
Mm-hmm.
So look at your diet, make sure you're drinking lots of fluids, make sure your bowels are okay. And if any of those issues are ongoing, go talk to your doctor.
Okay. My 5-year-old boy keeps getting what looks like heat rashes, very itchy. Any suggestions? That's a tricky one, because telling a 5-year-old to not scratch something that's itchy is a whole world of difficulty, isn't it?
Exactly. And look, dermatitis is the term for inflamed skin. There's so many different causes, heat rash, you know, heat and sweating being one of them. A very simple thing in the summer, and it's not just for kids. A lot of people who get that prickly heat, it can be a yeast on the skin. So using ketoconazole shampoo, it's one of those anti-dandruff shampoos. You put on the lotion, on like a lotion from the neck down onto dry skin, leave it on an hour or so and wash it off. So if there's a yeast on the skin, that can help, particularly if it's particularly when they're hot or sweating. If he has eczema, which
is... So would this be the shampoo on the body in the bath?
Yes, the shampoo that you'd normally use for your hair, but you don't put it in the bath. You put it on your skin from the neck down dry.
Okay.
Leave it on a few hours. I sometimes say to adults, leave it on overnight, wash it off the next morning.
Okay.
So if you have that prickly heat that's due to kind of a yeast on your skin, particularly people who sweat, it can be very effective in managing that.
Okay. And what's that called?
Ketoconazole shampoo. Nizoral would be a brand that people know, but there are other brands as well.
Okay.
For kids, a lot of the time it's eczema, actually, that they've got patches of dermatitis and eczema. So again, you know, talk to your pharmacist or GP. Sometimes you can get just a mild steroid to put on the areas that are inflamed. Antihistamines, again, I feel like this is the antihistamine conversation today. Antihistamines can be helpful for itchy skin.
They seem to solve a lot of stuff, don't they?
They do. Well, a lot of the seasonal kind of skin and sinusy stuff,
and
we're in that
season,
yeah. And again, in that season, is he allergic to something? Is he being exposed to something that's causing him irritation? And to look at that, yeah.
Okay. Someone else says, can you use Viagra direct? I have high blood pressure. I'm 61.
Okay. So I'm going to say, consult with your GP. If you have any medical issues, and the pharmacists are supposed to say the same thing to you, The majority of people can use Viagra if they need to. It is safe in most people. However, there are some people it isn't. And anything like that, if you already have a medical condition, I would recommend that you should talk to a healthcare worker before you buy it.
Okay, so not just over the counter. Got sunstroke on holidays over 10 days ago. Granted, self-diagnosed, in brackets. Home now, but still not feeling right. What can I do?
So I suppose, again, I'd like to know what symptoms they're having. You know, sunstroke, you can get very sick with sunstroke. People can feel very weak and unwell, dehydrated. They can, at an extreme, they can be vomiting and actually collapse from because it's basically your body getting too hot. Often what happens on holidays, it's a combination of sort of the very kind of Northern European couple of weeks away where we go away, we lie in the sun all day and then we go out very late at night and maybe indulge in more alcohol than we normally would. So we end up doubly dehydrated in the morning. So, you know, the usual treatment we would stay is stay in, stay cool, wear kind of loose flowing clothes if your skin is irritated. The antihistamines, again, can help with any irritation of the skin. You know, any of those kind of lotions and creams, the aloe vera based ones can cool the skin down nicely. I always say a nice trick is put it in the fridge so it's nice and cool going onto your skin. Drink lots and lots of water. Make sure you're hydrated. But, you know, 10 days later, I wouldn't think that's just sunstroke. And I wonder if they're flu-like symptoms, which can be a symptom of sunstroke, have you actually picked up something else? There is an awful lot of COVID around at the moment, especially people travelling. I would say do a COVID test if you had weird symptoms. But go see your doctor if you're not picking up 10 days after that.
10 days sounds like a long time, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I seem to have a pimple or cyst on my neck, quite a lump. I'm putting Sudocream on it. Any tips?
And that if it's a quite a large, unusual lump on your neck, you probably should get someone to look at it, I would say.
Yeah, it doesn't say whether it's a man or male or female.
Yeah.
Can you get the COVID jab at any stage of pregnancy?
We recommend it after 16 weeks is what we usually say to our pregnant mums is to get it after 16 weeks of pregnancy.
OK.
They were giving
and
it
is it still
on,
advised for everyone to get it?
They're still advising it for all pregnant women to get it. And there are boosters around now, yeah. So okay. It's one of the kind of standard vaccines we recommend in pregnancy to women now is to have their COVID vaccines up to date.
Okay, especially as you say, COVID is
there's an awful lot of we have a doctor out sick this week with us, yeah.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Can you develop prickly heat during menopause? Hot flushes and prickly heat have started within weeks of each other. I'm 53, have had my last cycle in April. Also, I'm currently on antihistamines.
Yeah. So I suppose, as I said, prickly heat in some people can be a yeast on the skin. So you can imagine if you're getting hot flushes and then you sweat with those, yeast likes a warm, moist environment. So if you're sweating and there's any moisture on the skin, the yeast will thrive with that. So it's not that menopause causes prickly heat, but if you're sweating and you're prone to it, then the prickly heat will persist. So the antihistamines are good, but maybe try that ketoconazole shampoo topically. Might help.
Okay, that could work in this situation as well. Okay, cannot clear phlegm and mucus in nose, lasting 3 weeks now or more.
So that sounds like chronic rhinitis, which is hay fever. It can happen any time of year. So, God, we're really back to the antihistamines here. But also go to your GP, a nasal spray provides.
We're not mentioning any brands, by the way.
I feel like this is sponsored by antihistamines, but there are multiple brands. but a nasal spray can really help as well.
A nasal spray as well. Okay, I think that's it. You have punched through some amount of questions and answers today for someone who's jet lagged. Dr. Nina Burns, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday.
Brought to you by Active Iron
on News Talk.